had to leave, but we have about 10 or 15 minutes for questions, so I'd like to just actually open it up to the floor for questions and conversation.
Entitled Conversation that I made years ago, whereby there are two people walking on two different planes. It's a 3D animation. They're, as you see it, the two of them overtly or initially walk on the same plane, but the planes slowly move and you realize that all this time they were alone. And it was a piece that was made in regards to a conversation that I had in Palestine, Israel, in the project that related specifically to the two nations' kind of relation to the land, and visions that are both overlapping, seemingly about the same landscape, but actually absolutely apart. And in some way, it was also talking about that flat surface that I think Michael was referring to, the impenetrable otherness of others and the aloneness that happens inside conversation. Mm-hmm. And some of that is what we were trying to generate here. So that's a conversation between people that don't hear each other, that talk towards a shared, what they presume is a shared center. There's one story, one character that is the protagonist, but all of them are seeing it and him and the situation from angles that do not jive. And they don't add up to one whole. And that's actually something that came up yesterday that was really interesting to me too, where Marty was talking about this aggregate of individuals that don't form a type. I think maybe some of the tension that happened yesterday towards the end was between the idea that there could be a sum that reduces the individuals to a type, whereas his proposal was that the sum never reduces anybody. It's just an aggregate of individuals that are a collection maybe, but they're never less than just that. And that's again part of what we were trying to do here. So something about the plurality doesn't replace the blindness, the bias, and the specificity of the individuals. And so all of that are kind of things that are happening in that. It's a long answer to your question.
So I really, really enjoyed the sort of meditative essays that format of the film. There's one thing that you kind of put out there for us to consider, but then didn't come back to addressing, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about it in this context. And I'll admit that this is a little bit self-serving because I'm currently working on a project in the Balkans, and so I'm very interested in some of these historical questions. But it revolves around this idea of generation loss, I think, which is this wonderfully operative term that hinges onto a bigger question about history and how it is narrated and by whom it is narrated. And of course, the metaphor there being on one hand technical, but also about the specific generational relationship to what we might describe as the end of history, or these experiments that end dramatically, catastrophically, whether it's in Yugoslavia or something like Hoxha's regime in Tirana. And in my interactions with a lot of people who are, like, let's say broadly our age, there are radically different experiences depending on exile, one's mediated relationship to what's going on. And I'm wondering, I just wanted to hear you talk maybe a little bit more about that generational aspect of that history, and if that's something that you're interested in kind of pushing for making explicit.
No, it's absolutely, yeah, it's a huge argument. I mean, the reason why I came to this title for the kind of overall project of, you know, researching these tapes is because the ways that they were used in the past as archival material, and those are the ways that they were seen. And then those influence in the same way they influence the way that they were rejected as evidence. You know, so the way that, what I'm trying to say is the way that the tapes were used made them more rejectable, let's say, by people growing up in Serbia, for example. You know, we're getting to the point that now I don't know yet how to frame the language of this film, because all I care about is actually really, you know, making this so that people in Serbia would want to see this material once again. Mm-hmm. Because nobody wants to see it. I mean, yeah. People who've seen it many times, they just don't want to watch it anymore.
They can't see it.
And like a lot of that was pushed by, and Paige and I had this conversation yesterday, which was fascinating. I mean, you know, a lot of this was, this kind of narrative of like dealing with the past was pushed by NGOs. And for example, the moment that I point out in the end would completely not be something that an NGO would be interested in,
right.
In that kind of take, right? Because that moment of like, oh, this is all for capital.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is why this is being done. It's not interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is like, do we see bodies?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
And so on the margins of these tapes, I found sort of real evidence of, you know, the entire performance being kind of put together in the kind of larger context of it.
Mm-hmm.
And but then that's not enough to just as kind of a, it's not enough of an excuse to be able to like show it to people in Serbia and say, oh, here's new stuff that you haven't really watched. So I have to find a voice to frame this. And I think the way that will happen is through, you know, reflecting on these different practices of representing this same material and actually talking about the films that came before. And kind of including all of this in a kind of a meta narrative of representing these images, and I think that's where, you know, to make that generation loss, if you like, visible. You know, what happened through, you know, between these different representations.
Juveniles has changed since, I think it's 2012. I think in the middle of my work on natural life, things started to shift a little bit. And every kid now has a right to be resentenced, and actually their difference is being weighed into the process of the resentencing. They can't bring up the crime, but they can bring up their life inside as something to assess the potential for life outside. And so he's just ahead of his resentencing. It's probably going to happen in the next few months. But the judge can resentence him to life inside. It's not, there's no guarantee that it isn't. And so a lot of what we were doing was trying to create public opinion around this case so that even though this material is not really allowed in as part of the conversation throughout resentencing, it could just have some weight on the way the judge can handle the case in the next few months. So it's been 30 years now. He's 45.
Yeah, I have the kind of, like, I'm modify it more sophisticated way to ask this question, but I'm not going to. About like thinking about your circuits of circulation, you started to talk about who's the audience, kind of. But thinking about one of the crazy, the most amazing things I've heard in your material was this. Rarely does anyone ever include the, when you called me, I started talking about this, I started thinking mm-hmm. about this, because rarely does that moment of impulse from the actual filmmaker get put into that mm-hmm. interview, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's always asking questions, but like, it's never like, oh, the whole reason I'm saying anything is because you showed up at my door. And I really appreciated that because it gave me, it inscribed in the material, it also inscribed in the material of like, what are the publics that they imagined it for that you told them about? And the same, because you guys are the ones who are producing new publics for the material. So just curious about thinking about that, like how you dealt with the act of talking to people about that. I mean, you're saying that it was not going to reach a juridical kind of the legal framework, like your material, if anything, it could be in the court of public opinion. Right?
In the periphery again.
Yeah, in the periphery. So yeah, just wondering about those kinds of the constructions of publics for you all, counter publics.
I think you should start.
Yes, yeah.
So in some way, this is the darker side of this story, which we wanted, and I approached Meg in order to do something that would do the opposite of what it ended up doing. We wanted to hit the mainstream with something that has access to a very broad audience, much broader than you or the art goers, because we wanted to have a kind of tangible impact on his life. And the stories didn't yield to that. And so we ended up once again talking to ourselves. And so maybe that's part of the you that's there. And that's really sad, and I don't see a way around it, because if you tell the story as we heard it, which is broken and kind of blind, like a set of blind spots in an array, then the people that are capable of seeing that are not going to be the same that we wanted to address. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to resolve that.
Yeah.
Like in my practice in general, it's a kind of deviation from I unlike most of the people here, I come more from their art world and kind of reaching out to documentary for that purpose, to have some more tangible and not to be talking to myself. And I feel like I'm back in the same room as I started off.
Are you guys collaborating with each other?
What's that? We have tried, and they actually took a lot of the material from us. But they're not allowed to. It's part of the Michigan University, and so it's educational, and the students are supposed to do the digging themselves. So even though we offered them all these partial evidence, a lot of witnesses that could really fracture the prosecutor's version of this event, they're not allowed to use them. They need to dig them again and start from scratch as part of their educational process. So it's sitting there, and every semester new students take it on. It's fairly sad.
And we're not showing the public in public space?
I'm sorry?
In public space?
So we are.
We're installation in a public space instead of gallery space?
We actually, it wasn't exactly a public space. We had two versions. One was a text version that most of these documentations are for, of. But recently, on the date of the marking 30 years to his arrest, we showed it in a kind of, it was almost a home. But it serves as a gallery in Lansing, which is the heart of Michigan, or kind of where the government of Michigan is sitting. And the design was to, and it's run by a Latino woman who is hosting shows there that always address specific sliver of the Lansing community. Once again, it was not the gallery goers, but it was the converted, the people that came there had a kind of investment in his story. He has a huge following. He's a very public figure in the Latino community. And those are the people that showed up. I don't know how to go past that.
This is something it's making me think about, because definitely one of my, coming from more of an activist background, definitely a lot of my work is trying to try to run that line to be able to be legible on different levels. But it's making me think a little bit about how, like, these larger works or these more experimental or non-story driven works have this significant role to play, unfortunately somewhat in an echo chamber, but about the some of the sort of macro structural issues or can have that impact, but they have to be against story, they have to be beyond story, adjacent to story to actually articulate what it is, these larger things. But I mean, I can't help but think of Serial, right? Which is, so maybe when you're talking about that kind of direct advocacy to mm-hmm. save a single person's mm-hmm. life, you just gotta do that shit. Like, you know what I mean? You just have to do the, like, mm-hmm. you know, just Koenig, you know, like, do it, you know, take that material and make it into this thing, because that will get onto whatever Michigan Public Radio. I'm just saying in general. But so for the little thing, you actually, that you have to do that more direct advocacy where you're just like, this mm-hmm. is the story in this, you know?
No, I agree. And I think I'm wavering as an author, because I don't want to say it so simply.
Yeah.
But when you start showing all your doubt, and you're trying to find forms that reflect doubt, and you find forms that reflect the gaps, then you're kind of stepping away from that language. Because ethically, it feels like the right form. So I don't know how to exit this. This is, I think, part of what is coming out in this conference.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking also, now, I mean, for me, there's two parts to the solution, if there is a solution to this, you know, an answer to this question. And one is, you know, having multiple forms of the same piece, and that's something that kind of has been happening kind of naturally to me, just because of the way that I like to think about projects. But at the same time, I think it can have the consequence of reaching different audiences and in different ways. And for example, now in Belgrade, there's a way that you can generate interest in something just by being very blunt about things that happen, because the government is not very fond of, you know, putting these things out there at the moment. Whereas actually when we had the previous government, which was very fond of this type of, you know, let's lay out the evidence of what had happened, then it was actually easier for the public to reject it, because it was mm-hmm. like, oh, they're just trying to feed us this. Now you will get shut down. I mean, you try to, you know, do this in the space of a gallery, for example, and you will get, for example, an email saying, actually, we're having some problems. There's no power in the gallery. You can't put this exhibition up. You know, and things like that are happening.
We really had no power this morning. We were not trying to shut you down.
Yeah,
we support your work and agenda.
So things like that are happening with film festivals already, and I have friends who, you know, make films, and, you know, a film that a friend of mine made that was about the crimes that were committed, in Kosovo, was a big feature length of success, premiered in Cannes. It had all 6 screenings in Serbia. It had more screenings in Russia than it had in Serbia. So, you know, something to think about. But, you know, on the other hand, I think that the other part of the solution is, I do feel like emoting has a value, and, mm-hmm. you know, I was, like, guilty of that for sure in this presentation, because, you know, I like to listen to a lot of, like, spoken word poetry, and, like, I'm a huge fan of the grime scene in London and things like that, so... You know, they'll get into a groove and they'll start emoting, and you'll miss half of what they're saying, but then you'll go back and listen again and again and again and again. And that, to me, like, has a value, that kind of speed of presenting thoughts, but at the same time stringing them along on a single kind of swelling emotion. And that's, you know, a lot of what story tends to be about is just, like, kind of empty emoting, mm-hmm. you know, with no thoughts stringed along. But I think we can kind of do kind of complicated and do both at the same time.
I wanted to make an observation that I'm kind of wrestling with over the past few days, and it seems to hinge on some of these ideas. Because of, again, the Balkan thing, I've been thinking a lot about the debates around civil society, and, for example, Orban and the way that one can look at that region and talk in all of those ethnographic ways about the liberal democracy, but that weather vane is actually a weather vane about an increasingly global condition about a liberal democracy. And I think it raises, you raise a really, really salient point about the notion of the appropriateness or effectiveness of certain modes of narration and storytelling in the light of this condition. I mean, it's a Benjaminian question. Like, what is the mode of the storyteller in a given political moment? And it seems that this kind of, I like the idea of grime as a narration for responding to a liberalism.
Yeah. This is not a totally fully formed thought, and it comes from a selfish place because I've been working with this archival material from the Palma archive of these soldiers who committed the massacre in my film, going back and basically reenacting this massacre. And when I talk about the film, everybody's like, that's like the evidence, that's the interesting part. And I feel so frustrated about having to kind of like think about the archive as where the evidence is. And I think something that you guys are touching on in interesting ways is like actually a lot of where the evidence is what's left out of the archive. And that's like kind of the important thing to make the public interested in, when the public is so much more attracted to the sexiness of the evidence of the archive. And I'm wondering if you guys can talk a little bit more about that.
I mean, I could jump in. I know you've seen my other film, Evidence of the Evidence. Handy dandy name there. But it literally is about, it's not just about what's, I mean, for that's about the evidence in part about exclusion because it's material that wasn't fit for public television consumption because it was so degraded, it was dubs of dubs of dubs. And so there was that act of exclusion, and I felt like the entire thing needed to be seen, or not the entire thing, but that we had to have that process, and that the degraded imagery told us something about Attica. But on top of that is also just treating the evidence as a different kind of evidence, right? So that it's not the evidence that it's espousing itself to be, but actually, turning it into a different form of evidence. I think that's maybe one way to think about it.
And then go back to this off-frame or the silencing, like the evidence of what is outside. And I think the off-frame can be really dynamic. It's not just a category. Yeah. It can be something that can be really detailed. Mm-hmm. This is actually in answer to the panelists before. I felt that, like, for instance, the noise of the underwater maybe is not what we need. What we need is the silence and the details of what we cannot hear. So that I think there is a way to maybe make the what is not evident the evidence and really speak about off-frame and gaps in a very active way and make that focal point, which is a little bit what we're trying here, and maybe in a simpler way. And that's very much what you're doing, with erasure being the that you look at.
Yeah.
But there's also the idea that it can be right in the middle of the frame.
And it's right there, and it's not, and it
may not be off.
Like the deer piece. Mm-hmm.
Or it can be metadata, it can be metadata, like APIN,
Right.
But at the same time, I think, a hook is a hook, So, as long as there is something that gets people interested, you then switch it. Mm-hmm. When they start watching the piece, I don't know. I've been going to a lot of pitching forums recently. So there's this film that I've been working on for a number of years, and it's it has multiple layers. One which is more kind of character based, and not an archival piece, but something completely different, But it has a sort of layer which is more like about history and sort of reflecting on what the meaning of this story we're observing in the present moment might be. And I go to pitching forums, and everybody goes like, and literally these words. You'll see, it'll just be the characters in the end. You won't be able to make this film. You will cut out everything else. Mm-hmm. And so, but I'm okay, If this is interesting, fine for now, but, I'll make the film that I'll make in the end. So.
Maybe you'll see, because when they use the money, they'll make sure that you can. But, no, that wasn't my
You have to pick and choose who you take money from.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm noticing sort of a, we've sort of gotten to a kind of more comfortable place where we can talk about sort of, you know, alternatives to the story that it will inevitably be relegated at best to the art space, you know, at museums, exhibitions, whatever, or, you know, maybe online where nobody's going to see it. And then, you know, if we really intend to go for a more popular audience, we're inevitably going to move into, you know, bite the bullet. But actually, I mean, that's not even how, that isn't actually necessary, assuming we can sort of affect or change some of this gatekeeping.
Yeah.
Because it's not as if historically people have never watched
totally
really interesting work that does not depend on care. I mean, this, yeah, that's part of the point, like a little bit of historical awareness around documentary history, and you know, even what we now call experimental work, but which meant, you know, in the 80s might play on Channel 4, but I mean, it's not as if none of this has ever made it a difference or made it in, or even that people haven't worked. I'm not even making, I don't want to make a pitch for a commercial work, but I'm thinking...
But it's not even binary. I think there is character in your film. There is a character in my film that we're not entirely letting go of some of these techniques of suspense. And I think you can use them and still be ethical, and, you know, according to your own standards. It's not their way versus our way.
Yeah, like competing narratives. There's way, what's the film, Capturing the Friedmans? I mean, that's a hugely commercial success, you know, in documentary terms. You know, it's all about ambivalence and kind of the absent, the centering absence or whatever
we're
talking about. You know, I mean, it's not as if it's ever been done in this complicated way. It's just that, you know, we're getting narrower and narrower, and you hear really annoying terms like risk averse. Finding their way into the pitching forum. I mean, it's just totally inappropriate, out of control at this point.
We maybe have room for one more, or we could leave it with Alyssa's
final manifesto, mini manifesto.
Instruction that we not be risk averse.
Yeah.
Or Alyssa.
Alyssa.
Since you're my
colleague. Alyssa, okay.
I know, I'm in solidarity.
In solidarity, all right.
Strongly.
Thank you.